Good morning. This morning's reading is from Leviticus chapter 22. It'll be on the screen. And there are Bibles, if you'd like to be able to follow in print, at the front door if you'd like to grab one. Otherwise, follow it in your own Bible. It's on page 172 for those who are using the church book. Now, Naomi's already introduced this. Moses said this to Aaron and his sons, and to all the Israelites. The Lord said to Moses, "Tell Aaron and his sons to treat with respect the sacred offerings the Israelites consecrate to me, so they will not profane my holy name. I am the Lord. Say to them, for the generations to come, if any of your descendants is ceremonially unclean and yet comes near the sacred offerings that the Israelites consecrate to the Lord, that person must be cut off from my presence. I am the Lord. If a descendant of Aaron has a defiling skin disease or a bodily discharge, he may not eat the sacred offerings until he is cleansed. He will also be unclean if he touches something defiled by a corpse or by anyone who has an emission of semen, or if he touches any crawling thing that makes him unclean, or any person who makes him unclean, whatever the uncleanness may be. The one who touches any such thing will be unclean till evening. He must not eat any of the sacred offerings unless he has bathed himself with water. When the sun goes down, he will be clean, and after that he may eat the sacred offerings, for they are his food. He must not eat anything found dead or torn by wild animals and so become unclean through it. I am the Lord. The priests are to perform my service in such a way that they do not become guilty and die for treating it with contempt. I am the Lord who makes them holy. No one outside a priest's family may eat the sacred offering, nor may the guest of a priest or his hired worker eat it. But if a priest buys a slave with money, or if slaves are born in his household, they may eat his food. If a priest's daughter marries anyone other than a priest, she may not eat any of the sacred contributions. But if a priest's daughter becomes a widow or is divorced, yet has no children, and she returns to live in her father's household as in her youth, she may eat her father's food. No unauthorized person, however, may eat it. Anyone who eats a sacred offering by mistake must make restitution to the priest for the offering, and add a fifth of the value to it. The priest must not desecrate the sacred offerings the Israelites bring to the Lord by allowing them to eat the sacred offerings and so bring upon them guilt requiring payment. I am the Lord who makes them holy.
Well, good morning, everyone. My name is Hendre. I'm the associate pastor here at Trinity Church Lockleys, and we are so excited that you, despite the heat, have decided to join us today. Please do take care of yourself. There's water at the back, and if you need anything, go harass someone who looks like they know what they're doing. But please look after yourselves. It's always devastating when people fail morally, particularly people in a position of leadership, particularly when it's people in positions of spiritual leadership, when they fail publicly, when pastors are caught in scandals, when leaders are behaving hypocritically. It undermines the trust. It damages the church's reputation, and it hinders the gospel. But this isn't a new problem. In Leviticus, back in chapter 10, we saw Nadab and Abihu, Aaron's sons, who disobeyed God by offering an unauthorized sacrifice, an unauthorized fire. And their careless actions cost them their lives. As priests, their behavior misrepresented God's holiness. And their failure highlighted the need for leaders who reflect his character faithfully. Now, Leviticus 21 and 22, which is where we will be focusing this morning, returns to the theme of priests and outlines the high standards that God required of them. Now, looking at these chapters, or looking at Leviticus, if you have just wandered in, might seem like a rather strange choice. But I'm hoping that we will see together that actually, Leviticus is a book that wonderfully prepares us to realize just how good Christ's coming was. That as we see the impossible standards that the priests had to live up to, it will also remind us of just how perfect Jesus was as the ultimate priest and why it is such good news. And so today, as we look at this, we'll see three main things. We'll see, firstly, that the priests have standards. We'll see that Jesus perfectly fulfilled those standards as our ultimate high priest. And we'll see that as Christians, we are called to live as priests to the world, representing God through our lives and our words. Priests have standards. Chapter 21 and 22, as we had read a portion of, contains a series of standards, a series of requirements of priests that they had to meet. These can be broadly broken down into three categories. We see them being given rules around mourning in 21 verses 1 to 6, around marriage in verses 13 to 15, and in chapter 22 about ritual purity. But these were far from just being arbitrary rules or regulations, but they were designed with a specific intention to uphold the priest's unique role as representatives of God. These standards were strict, but they served a public purpose, to reflect God's holiness to the people. Mourning, the first area that we encounter in these chapters, we see the priests being forbidden from touching dead bodies. There are a few exceptions made for the priests when it is someone particularly close in their immediate family. But for the high priest, the standards are even higher, with even their closest family members being excluded. This might sound harsh. This might sound callous to us that even in death, these priests are limited from how they can mourn, how they can engage with them. But there is a clear logic. In Israel, touching a dead body made someone ritually unclean. Now, as we've seen in Leviticus before, ritual uncleanness is different to sinfulness, but they became ritually unclean as a symbol of the brokenness of this world. And for priests, being ritually unclean actually meant they weren't able to do their job. They weren't able to do the work of being a priest. They were unable to serve in the tabernacle. And it disrupted the spiritual rhythm of the community. The process of becoming clean again would also be sometimes long-winded. Often for smaller things, it was waiting till the end of the day. But for touching a dead body, it could be waiting a week of a priest being out of action, being unable to fulfill the vital duties Israel needed them to fulfill, to offer sacrifices. And yet the high priest's rules were even higher yet again, especially around days like the Day of Atonement, the center of the book of Leviticus, which we looked at a couple of weeks ago. But these rules weren't there out of a lack of compassion, but actually out of a compassion for Israel as a whole. Israel needed their priests. They needed them to fulfill their duties, and so these rules enabled them to minimize the times in which they were compromised, minimize the times in which they could not fulfill these duties. As we move on to the rules around marriage, we see that the priests are limited in who they are allowed to take as a wife. Now, where the regular priests had some restrictions, those for a high priest, again, were even higher. He could only marry a virgin from among his own people. Now, these rules, again, had a practical purpose. They were designed to reflect the simplicity and the purity of the high priest's life. It was meant to mirror God's holiness. His marriage as the high priest wasn't just a private matter, but it symbolized his role as a spiritual leader, fully devoted to God, without any distractions, without any compromises. Additionally, for the priesthood, the lineage was also important. The priest was a hereditary role, passed from father to son. And the high priest's children would likely inherit his role. And so ensuring that his wife came from among his people helped to preserve the purity and continuity of the priestly line. The third area we see in chapter 22, verse 1 to 6, is more broadly around ritual purity. And much like the touching of the dead, there are things throughout life that cause them to become ritually clean, ritually unclean, and would prevent them from handling sacrifices, from engaging with the tabernacle. Any uncleanness would have prevented them from this. And so again, the emphasis here was on the seriousness of their role, the seriousness of approaching a holy God. The priest's actions reflected God's holiness, and maintaining their purity ensured that the worship of the community remained undefiled. But even more than these logical reasons we might be able to deduce, Leviticus chapter 22 actually makes it pretty clear for us. In verses 31 to 33, they give us the rationale, saying, "Keep my commands and follow them. I am the Lord. Do not profane my holy name, for I must be acknowledged as holy by the Israelites. I am the Lord who made you holy and who brought you out of Egypt to be your God. I am the Lord." The priests represented God to the people, and their lives, therefore, had to reflect his holiness. The rules for mourning, for marriage, and for purity were designed to ensure that they were always ready to serve. But inevitably, life in a broken world meant that that was impossible. It was an impossible task to remain clean. Priests would become unclean through circumstances like death, like illness, interrupting their ability to serve. But even more than this, as we saw when we looked at priests last time in Leviticus, the priests themselves were sinful too. They needed atonement just like everyone else. No matter how diligent they were, the limitations of the Levitical priesthood were clear. The people needed something greater. A priest who wouldn't be disqualified, one who couldn't be defiled, who didn't need to atone for his own sin. And Leviticus, therefore, helps us see why Jesus, why our high priest coming to earth is such great news. It celebrates his fulfillment of this task no one else could do. Jesus, the ultimate priest. In Hebrews 7, 26 to 28, we see a summary of Jesus' unique qualifications as our high priest. "Such a high priest truly meets our needs, one who is holy, blameless, pure, set apart from sinners, exalted above the heavens. Unlike the other priests, he does not need to offer sacrifices day after day, first for his own sins and then for the sins of the people. He sacrificed for their sins once for all when he offered himself. For the law appoints as high priests men in all their weakness, but the oath which comes after the law appointed the Son who has been made perfect forever." Unlike these flawed Levitical priests, Jesus was a perfect priest. And there are three key ways in which Jesus' priesthood is so much superior than that of the Levitical priest. The first is that Jesus was sinless. The Levitical priests, like us, like all humans, were flawed and were sinful, rebelled against God, gave in to the cravings of their flesh. And before they were able to come to God to intercede on behalf of others, they first had to confront their own humanity, to bring their own sins before God. But beyond their sin, as we already said, they became ritually unclean again and again. But Jesus, we see described in verse 26, as holy, blameless, pure, and set apart from sinners. He never needed to offer sacrifices for his own sins, because he has none. He was never disqualified or interrupted in his role as a mediator, because he could not be defiled. He could not be unclean, because in and of himself he was holy. He not only meets the requirements of the Levitical priests, but surpasses them. He is and always was ready and fully qualified to bridge the gap between a holy God and a sinful humanity. And that is why, as we see in Hebrews 7, verse 25, he can save completely those who come to God through him. Unlike the Levitical priest, he is not limited by his own sin and uncleanness. Secondly, Jesus is better because of his sacrifice. The Old Testament sacrifice, which those of you who have been in growth groups, I'm sure you have seen and felt just the weight of these ongoing sacrifices, day after day, year after year, that they had to keep offering before God. It was endless, never ending, because their sin was never ending. But Hebrews 10 verse 4 reminds us, it is impossible for the blood of bulls and goats to take away sins. These sacrifices, they were never really sufficient. They never really addressed the problem. They were never enough, but were pointing forward to something greater, something which could actually provide reconciliation with God. And that is exactly what Jesus did. Instead of offering an animal like the priest did, Jesus offered himself. Hebrews 9:26 says, "But he has appeared once for all at the culmination of the ages to do away with sin by the sacrifice of himself." On the cross, Jesus became the perfect sacrifice, fully removing sin and opening the way to God permanently, not just until we mess up again, not just until the next day, the next week, the next year, but forever. Where the Old Testament sacrifices were like putting a Band-Aid on a huge hemorrhaging wound, Jesus' sacrifice was the cure, not just covering it up, but fixing it at the root, removing the problem entirely. At the core. So Jesus is better because he doesn't have his own sin to deal with first, because he is a better sacrifice, and thirdly, because he is an internal priesthood. The Levitical priests were inevitably limited by their humanity. They grew old, they grew gray. They messed up their words, they overheated, they got tired, and they died. Their ministry came to an end. Each new generation needed new priests, underscoring the temporary nature of their priesthood. But Jesus is different. Hebrews 7:24-25 says, "Because Jesus lives forever, he has a permanent priesthood. Therefore, he is able to save completely those who come to God through him, because he always lives to intercede for them. Jesus' death on the cross did not end his ministry like the death of the priests ended theirs. No, his resurrection ensures that his priesthood is eternal. Even now, he is interceding for us at the right hand of the Father, never growing tired, never stepping down, and never leaving his post as our advocate and high priest. Now, there'll be some of you in the room who, as we've looked at these high standards, looked at these impossible standards, might be overwhelmed by a sense of your own inadequacy, of your inability to meet them, of your constant falling short, of your distance from this holy God. If that's you, Jesus is the high priest you need. Sinless and perfect, he has already met those high standards on your behalf. He has done everything necessary to deal with your sin and to bring you to God. This offer is available to you right now. All you need to do is to respond. You don't need to earn God's favor. You just need to trust in his Son. Trust in what he has already done for you. If that is you, we would love to pray with you and for you. And so please come, grab me or anyone else you've seen up the front after the service. If you have questions on how this could be possible or how this works, do come ask us. We'd love nothing more. But there are others of you here who already are Christians, who already have accepted Jesus, but who still continue at times to feel weighed down by guilt and shame, still tempted to think that you're not good enough for God. For you too, I want to remind you, as Hebrews does, that Jesus has done everything needed to reconcile you. You are fully accepted, and Jesus is interceding for you right now, and so you can approach him with confidence. Live in light of that confidence. Do not be weighed down by guilt and shame, but trust in his grace as you bring your needs and your struggles to him. We are priests to the world. So we've seen Jesus as our perfect high priest, sinless, sacrificial, eternal. And for those who trust in him, that's not the end of the story. That is a lot to be grateful for, but Jesus doesn't just save us from our sin, but he calls us to action. Jesus didn't reconcile us to God just so we could enjoy the benefits for ourselves, but he also calls us to his mission, to serve as priests to the world. 1 Peter 2, verse 9, when Peter's writing to the scattered believers across the Roman Empire, he says, "But you are a chosen people, a royal priesthood, a holy nation, God's special possession." But this priestly calling, this priestly duty, is not a New Testament idea. It was nothing new. In fact, it had always been God's plan for his people. All the way back in Exodus 19, when God rescued his people from Egypt, when he established them as a people, as a nation, he declared, "You will be for me a kingdom of priests, a holy nation." Israel was always meant to mediate God's blessings to the nations, meant to represent his character to the world, to show the world what it looks like to live under the rule of a holy, loving, and just God. But, as we know, Israel often failed and fell short. Instead of being a light to the nations, They succumbed to the same sins as those around them. In Jesus, this calling has been fulfilled and extended to us, his church. As God's holy people, we have been given this mission to mediate between God and the world, declaring his praises and showing his character through our words and our lives. And this is not just a great privilege, but it's also a great responsibility. Just as the priests in Leviticus mediated between God and Israel, we are to mediate between God and the world. We might not offer animal sacrifices. That's not usually what we do here on a Sunday. Instead, we proclaim the gospel. Jesus, the sacrifice which has already been paid for the world. The good news of his life, death, and resurrection. Our goal is to bring people to God, pointing them to Jesus, the ultimate priest. And as 1 Peter 2, verse 9 highlighted, one of our primary responsibility as priests is to declare the praises of the one who saved us. Sharing the gospel and telling others about how God has transformed our lives. We have been called out of darkness into a marvelous light. Not just for our own benefit, but so that we might point others to him as well. And so every time you share how God has been working in your life, you are fulfilling your priestly duty. This is not just a role for pastors, for missionaries, for a select few, but for each one of you who calls yourself a child of God. Every act of declaring his praises is a part of this calling. But just as there were standards for priests in the Old Testament, how we live today as a kingdom of priests, as a royal priesthood, still matters, and matters a lot. The priests in the Old Testament were held to a high standard because they represented God to the people of Israel. If they failed, whether becoming unclean, acting corruptly, or just neglecting their duties, it reflected poorly on God's character and it undermined his worship. And in many senses, the same is true today. As Christians, our lives are meant to point people to God. Our actions either enhance or distract from the gospel message we share. And this is why 1 Peter 2 reminds us, live such good lives among the pagans that though they accuse you of doing wrong, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day he visits. Your actions do matter. I think this is something that we all know to be true. The way someone acts influences how we interpret their words. It influences how much trust we put in what they say. Regardless of where you stand politically, I'm sure all of us can agree that Donald Trump's past actions and comments have at times hindered his work, have at times undermined his ability to lead effectively, has prevented others from trusting what he says. Even those who agree with his policies have at times cringed at the disconnect between his behavior and his role. And in the same way, I'm sure all of you can think of Christians you've been in a room with when they have said something or done something that just has made you want to scream. It's made you want to yell, stop, you don't know what you're doing. Take that back. And if we're honest with ourselves, at times, that has been us. But just as the negative is true, the opposite is also true. Our lives can be the very thing that draws people towards Jesus. There are countless stories of people who have come to faith because of the persistent love, the persistent loving witness of those around them. How the patient, caring, gracious way in which they were loved and loved in God's kindness worked to soften their hearts and allowed them to hear the truth of the gospel. Our lives matter. God uses our words and our actions to draw others to himself. Now, this isn't said to make you feel guilty or to make you feel like you have to strive for perfection. None of us get it right all the time. But as we have said, Jesus is our perfect high priest and has already covered our failures. Our role is to respond to his grace, letting him transform and use us to reflect his love to a world that so desperately needs it. And in God's kindness, even our imperfections can show his grace. In our weakness, his strength is made perfect. And so don't be overwhelmed by this burden, but see the privilege that it is that God has chosen to work through ordinary, broken vessels like us. As a church, we have been encouraging you to think of two people and to be praying for 2 minutes a day for them. Who are those two people for you? Have you invited them to Christmas here at church yet? Regardless of whether they end up coming, whether they end up accepting your invitation, Christmas is not the end. We need to continue to not only invite people once a year who we never talk to the rest of the year to a Christmas event, but to be allowing our lives to bear witness to God, inviting them into our lives so that they might hear the words we share, the truth about the gospel. Let's be praying that God might be working through the witness of our life and that we would have the boldness to speak the words of truth so others might be compelled by the gospel. The standards for the priests in Leviticus point us to our perfect high priest, the only one who could fulfill them all. And through his sacrifice, he has made us his royal priesthood, called to reflect his holiness, to proclaim his love to the world. And so this Christmas, let's embrace that calling, living lives that point others to Jesus and sharing his hope with those around us. Who will you share that with this coming week? Let's pray. Dear Heavenly Father, we thank you so much for Jesus, our great high priest, a great high priest who did not have his own sin to atone for, a high priest who is perfect, who offered the perfect sacrifice that didn't just bandage up the problem, but addressed it at its root. A and a high priest who is eternal. We thank you for the confidence that gives us and for the privilege that has given us to be a kingdom of priests to this world. God, you are holy. You are almighty. And we desire for your name to be praised throughout this world. Amen.
Please join us as we stand and sing to our God again.